Welcome to the X-Men Task Podcast, the Spider-Man years. My name is Willie Simpson.
My name is Sonia Rappaport.
And today, Sonia, we are on the fifth episode of season one of the Spider-Man animated series, the episode titled The Menace of Mysterio. Mm-hmm. This was, so far, one of my favorite sort of one-off introduction episodes we've had thus far.
Yeah, I totally agree. This was a fun one.
Yeah, the show is quickly hitting its stride, I would say, and just giving you all the elements of what makes for a good Spider-Man episode, at least in my eyes.
Yeah.
Things that I like that tickle my imagination in a Spider-Man episode. Real New York City landmarks, which we have several here. Colorful villains, Mysterio being one of the best, I think.
Yeah, me too.
Mysterio is going to be the main villain in the Spider-Man Far From Home movie, the sequel to Spider-Man Homecoming.
Right.
And he's played by, I think Jake Gyllenhaal is playing him.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
And which is kind of interesting because he was set to replace Tobey Maguire in Spider-Man 2 when they were having contract negotiation problems.
Right.
So he finally
gets a turncoat.
Right, yeah. He's a jilted person from the movie business finally getting a role in a Spider-Man movie. So yeah. Some small, weak parallels there, but some nonetheless. But yeah, Mysterio, another like great classic oddball unique Spider-Man villain.
I love the look of Mysterio. The fishbowl head that lights up when he talks.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah, he's like an evil astronaut or something.
Exactly.
But
yeah.
Like a 1950s astronaut before we really knew what a real life astronaut looked like, you know, like Tales of Fantasy or something, when they would like those old sci-fi magazines.
Yeah,
they would give astronauts those fishbowl helmets,
right?
As opposed to sort of like half fishbowl helmet,
right? Yeah,
but yeah, but like
he was my favorite villain when I was a kid.
Yeah, I love Mysterio too. Everything about the character is great. The design of the character, like you said, with the fishbowl. The way his helmet lights up when he speaks.
There's something very funny about him having a fishbowl head, but also a flowing cape.
Right, yeah.
I'm not sure why those are incongruous.
He kind of, like, weirdly reminds me of Magneto in a dopey way.
Uh-huh.
You know, because
the
Magneto...
purple cape.
Right, yeah, that's probably the main reason.
The commanding voice.
Yeah, I mean, and even though Magneto doesn't wear a fishbowl on his head, there's something funny about Magneto's helmet and the fact that he even has one. And there's something kind of industrial about Mysterio's outfit too, similar to Magneto. You know, like Magneto has that, like, he's got like that necklace of rivets, of like bulbous rivets, like going under his neck there. You know what I'm talking about? Mysterio like has similar like weird like industrial like buttons, and like his body armor, I guess, is basically what it comes down to. But beyond that, he's a really cool character. One of, again, like Spider-Man's rogues gallery is incredible. And another green-colored villain.
Yeah.
I Googled it. I said there's too many green-colored villains in Spider-Man's universe to be a coincidence. I thought, like, maybe it was something... It's like, is it some Shakespearean thing where the villains are dressed in green?
And no, I think it's just that Spider-Man is red and blue, so they don't want villains to be red and blue, so they make them yellow, green, purple, like colors that stand out in stark contrast to Spider-Man.
Right, yeah, so exactly. Turns out it's just a contrast of colors thing.
Uh-huh.
And, I mean, you would think all the villains being green would be a problem. No, it's they all look great. Mysterio's no exception. He's like, I guess like he's mainly green and purple. He has some yellow on his outfit too.
I think so.
Yeah, his like gloves are yellow or parts of his body armor. Anyway, so this is a Mysterio origin episode. Weirdly, it's also, we get our first glimpse into Spider-Man's origin.
Yeah.
Which up till now, which is episode 5, they haven't really like spoke about too directly.
I like that they don't make it a whole episode. It's like a couple minutes, just a little bit of backstory, so you can see, like, oh, that's where he came from. And they don't dwell on it. They just give you the information and move right along, and I love that.
It's incredibly minimalist. And you're right. With Spider-Man's origin, it's been told so many times that the less is better, which is, you know, one of the main things... people, critics, and myself at least applauded about Spider-Man Homecoming, that they ignored the origin altogether. Like, at the very least in that movie, his friend Ned was just asking him, like, what happened. And you heard Peter just allude to it very vaguely. You know, it's like, Ned asked him, like, oh, is the spider still alive? He's like, no, spider's long dead, Ned. You know, like, just like things like that. So, yeah, so, like, we get Spider-Man's origin. We'll get to that in a minute. But really, a wonderful, like we said, it's in our opinion, or at least our general opinion, restarting the series, that the best episodes were the ones in full continuity where one just led to the next, and that the one-off episodes weren't quite as good. But for a one-off episode, this one's quite good.
Mm-hmm.
So, and like I said, it has real-world locations. So this one starts at the Metropolitan Museum of Modern Art, correct?
Mm-hmm.
The Met.
No, not Modern Art. The Met.
Oh, right. The Met. Yeah, that's
the Metropolitan Museum of Art.
Right. The Metropolitan Museum of Art. I get those confused. So it's being robbed. It looks like it's Spider-Man doing the robbery.
In the Egyptian section.
Right. He's stealing a bunch of precious jewels. Obviously, it's a fake Spider-Man. We know Spider-Man's a good guy. He doesn't rob things. I like that the fake Spider-Man has all the jewels in a woven spider bag.
Yeah,
and all the,
cool.
The jewels are just shining through the spider bag that's so crammed full. And just to, like, you know, this is obviously a setup. So, and just to hammer home that it's a setup, they show this fake Spider-Man, like, after he escapes, he dips back out underneath an air duct and he waves to the camera.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, I'm Spider-Man, I'm guilty. So meanwhile, we get some light continuity in this episode. We get some resolution of what happened after Spider-Man met Mary Jane. She was introduced a few episodes before. She was set up in the blind date, similar to how it was in the comics. But we never saw what happened on the date, or heard like, it just seemed like it cut off abruptly from when we last heard of her.
Uh-huh.
And, like, you know, there's been talk that some of these episodes are out of order. I don't know if this one was supposed to air after episode 3, but either way, it doesn't really matter. But we see Mary Jane. She's calling Peter Parker. She's, like, jazzercising in her yoga pants.
She's just stretching.
Yeah, no. There's, like, some, like, dance music going on in the background,
oh, okay.
too. Yeah, so she's working up a sweat. And we learned some interesting details about Mary Jane. One, she's a theater major. I guess presumably at the same college as Peter, right?
I guess.
Yeah, I think, like, later in the episode...
They run into each other,
yeah,
on campus,
yeah, it looks,
right?
like it's the same campus.
Uh-huh.
So they're both going to Empire State University. She's calling Peter. She said she needs help with her physics homework.
Mm-hmm.
Her questions related to what if non-planetary bodies can exude gravitational force, of which Spider-Man, of course, is a nerd and knows the answer. She cuts him off. She says, let's just go on a date, or, you know, it's a steady date, much like he had with Felicia.
Mm-hmm.
So Peter really, like, cashing in on his genius.
Yeah, the show's really making nerds cool.
That's right, yeah. Although it leads to an interesting question, which we'll discuss later, like, if it's more than just his genius that attracts women to him.
Yeah, obviously.
Right, yeah. But anyway, Spider-Man is so excited that he gets another date that he jumps on his ceiling fan in his room, and it breaks completely and he falls off. I don't know how he's going to explain that to Aunt May later, but he goes down to see Aunt May, and then he alludes to the fact, or it's alluded to somehow, that they did have a blind date.
Yeah.
And that it went well.
Right.
So he's been dating, he's dating two fabulous ladies, Felicia Hardy and Mary Jane Watson. So his social life is quite active, somehow fitting it all in, studying, being a photographer, and a superhero in his spare time.
Mm-hmm.
He's having it all. Aunt May, though, keys Peter into the latest Spider-Man news. The robbery is fully covered on the television.
Right, they're watching TV while Aunt May gives him pancakes for breakfast.
Right. Peter immediately defends Spider-Man. He says, well, anyone can wear a Spider-Man costume. And she's like, oh, really? Can that person do this? And they show Spider-Man, like, sticking to walls and spinning webs and, like, hopping around.
Getting away with his spider-woven bag of jewels.
Right. And Aunt May is very... we get the first sense that Aunt May does not like Spider-Man, which is going to be a recurring theme in the show.
Mm-hmm.
That she's very distrustful of him and thinks he's dangerous and a menace to society.
Well, I don't think it's so much that she's inherently distrustful of him. I think it's that she follows the media.
Right.
She can't know better than what the reporters are telling her.
That's true. I mean, she's also a sucker for, I'm going to say, the right-wing blowhard media of J. Jonah Jameson. I only bring that up because I worked, like 5 years ago, I worked side-by-side with the 75-year-old woman who was just like the sweetest old lady, right?
Mm-hmm.
And she worked because she was just trying to get away from her home life. Like, her 99-year-old mother was still alive, and she had to take care of her.
Uh-huh.
So her vacation in life was working.
Right.
So she would come to work, and it would be like her retirement. And, like, she was kind of wacky and fun. Not the best worker, but who cares at that age, right?
Okay.
But anyway, the point is, like, she would always, like, bring up these insane, you know, conspiracy theories that she'd read in her tabloid newspapers.
Uh-huh.
And I always have to, like, carefully... She's like, what do you think of this? And I'd have to, like, explain to her, like, why it's a lie or why it's fake or why... She's like, well, they wouldn't print it if it isn't real, you know?
Uh-huh.
And she was so sweet and nice that I couldn't outright tell her she's, like, an idiot or something. I mean, I just think that a lot of, like, old people are prone to, like, sensationalist tabloid journalism. So...
And young people.
Well, people of all ages, yes. But you know what I'm saying. But like,
that's why the tabloids are sold. You know what I mean? Like, people buy into it.
That's true,
literally and figuratively.
I know, but like, I'm just saying, it tracks in my experience that like old, like sweet old ladies would be susceptible to it as well.
Mm.
So just watching this reminded me of that woman I worked with.
Yeah.
And also, and J. Jonah Jameson feeds right into that market as a character. So it's interesting in this case, Peter rushes to the museum, the crime scene. J. Jonah Jameson there is personally reporting on the event for his television network. There's a funny bit of like exposition that answers a question we've been asking about the show.
Mm-hmm.
Like, why does J. Jonah Jameson hate Peter Parker? Like, sort of unprompted. Like, why is he distrustful of him? Why does he not like him?
Mm-hmm.
And he lets out a line here that sort of explains it, where he alludes to the fact that, like, how come... You photograph Spider-Man all the time, but the one night he's clearly committing a crime, you're nowhere to be found.
Mm.
Like, where were you? And, of course, you know, we know the answer as the audience, that Peter is Spider-Man, and this is not the real Spider-Man.
Right, Peter was in bed sleeping.
Right, exactly.
While this crime was going on.
Yeah, so, but we get an idea of why JJ doesn't like Peter, because often...
He's unreliable.
Well, that's part of it.
To JJ, he's unreliable.
Right, yeah, because really the only stuff Peter gives JJ is Spider-Man being heroic.
Yeah.
He never gives him Spider-Man in an unflattering light, which makes a lot of sense, and it's just like a nice little like plot contrivance.
Mm.
So Peter is investigating the crime scene himself. He sneaks into a back room. He discovers a spider web. He comments that, the spider web hasn't dissolved yet, whereas mine dissolves after an hour. Which is another thing I like about his spider webs, the lore of the spider webs. I like the show. They really cover every basis of the Spider-Man comic.
Mm.
Like, they get to it eventually, and, like, there's no stone left unturned. And there's, like, science reasons behind it, you know? I mean, like, fake science, but entertaining science.
Mm-hmm.
And here we're introduced to a character that's going to be recurring on the show, Lieutenant Lee of the NYPD.
Mm-hmm.
I guess she's, like, a Latina woman... who she just reminds me of like a mid-90s Law and Order character, which is another reason why I love the show too, is because it just the touchstones of characters. I mean, she might be from the comics as well. I don't know how deep of a dive Lieutenant Lee is. She might be made up for the show.
Mm.
Someone can let us know that. But just like it just has the feel of a relevant like mid-90s show, much like Law and Order was.
Yeah.
Which like my dad. It was Law and Order was the kind of show that my dad sort of forced me to watch every day with him. Because it's been on television endlessly in reruns.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just like, you know, you get home early from school at 3:00 and you're watching your cartoons or whatever. But then my dad gets home at like 4:35 and it like he immediately puts on his Law and Order for like 2 hours. And, you know, he's controlling the TV at this point. He like makes you watch it with him.
You could also just get up and not watch TV.
Well, obviously, yeah. But I mean, who's going to turn away from the almighty glowing television at the age of 10 or 12 or whatever it is?
Mm-hmm.
And it's just like I remember Law and Order being it's a show you can follow as a kid, but it felt very adult and it felt very real, and it felt like these are real serious issues. But growing up myself now, and it's like a slightly more sophisticated age with more sophisticated television, when you rewatch Law and Orders from the 90s, the classic series,
it feels dated
and it feels a bit sillier. It's like a lot faker than you remember too, and every plot is the same, where you know,
formulaic.
Right. Yeah. There's a murder in downtown Manhattan somewhere. There's like thousands of murders in downtown Manhattan, which never happen in real life.
But, right.
And they always solve the case pretty much.
Right. Through a series of like tweaked out witnesses.
Right. Yeah. Witnesses who are never
suspicious ex-lovers.
Right. Yeah. And witnesses who are never excited to be talking to the police or scared at all. They're just like going about selling their hot dogs or working on the docks, and like the police come and speak to them every day. I think other comedians have made extensive note of that. But the point is like
other.
Well, yeah. Right. I'm not counting myself as one of them, but I've just seen that. The point is Law and Order. Like, it's still very watchable, the classic series today. Don't get me wrong, it's great television, but it's sillier, nostalgic television on rewatch. But like I said, as a kid, I remember it being very serious and very adult. And Lieutenant Lee reminds me of those characters.
Bring it all back. Okay.
Right, okay. So anyway, it's at this point at the museum, Mysterio reveals himself in his full costume. We discussed it's awesome. He's a great character. He takes off his rolling fishbowl helmet and sort of rolls it on his arms like a magician. Would he's kind of like the Headless Horseman in a weird way, like allusions to that. He promises to catch Spider-Man himself, and he wants J. Jonah Jameson to film it. And I like that JJ is immediately distrustful of him too. He's not like so rabid to just trust the guy who's gonna bring down Spider-Man. He's like, you just remind me of another creep in a costume, you know. So, but at the same time, the allure of catching Spider-Man appeals to him, and he wants to set up a story in his mind that a hero bringing Spider-Man down, who's public enemy number one in JJ's mind.
Yep.
Anyway, Mysterio shows some of his powers. It makes it seem that he's collapsing the museum. The walls are caving in. Only Spider-Man doesn't really react. Everyone's running for cover, but it's because his spider sense isn't detecting the danger, which is a very interesting, like another cool aspect of spider sense that we get in the show. We haven't really talked about it too much, but the spider sense is really a great looking gimmick in the show.
Yeah, it's so cool.
Yeah. Like, how would you describe it?
It's almost like a blacklight effect, but it shifts quickly.
Yeah.
And there's that specific, like, high-pitched sound that goes along with it.
Yeah, it really, like, anxiety-inducing sound.
Yeah.
But, like, it helpful is, anxiety.
But between the sound and, like, the blacklight feeling, it does give you... like a sense of like high alert, you know?
Right. And also it's like they show briefly that weird like psychedelic mental tie-dye effect.
Yeah.
That something extra like sensory is going on in Peter's mind.
Yeah, it's really well done.
Yeah, it's really well done. Again, like the psychic landscapes in X-Men and in Spider-Man, excellent visual representations of magical mind powers.
Mm-hmm.
So Peter realizes there's something wrong. He's not fooled by the roof collapsing, really. Meanwhile, he's trying to, you know, he's just walking along somewhere, I guess, and he hears a radio report saying that Spider-Man is again robbing an area. This time it's the Brooklyn Bridge Mall, and so he heads off.
Not a real location, don't think.
Unless it existed in the 90s.
Maybe.
I don't think so.
I don't think so.
Revitalization of the Brooklyn Bridge area didn't. Like, probably didn't happen until the 2000s.
The only thing I could think is that it's South Street Seaport, and they didn't call it that.
But they wouldn't have called... Do you think they would have called it the Brooklyn Bridge Mall on the Manhattan side?
It's right in the Brooklyn Bridge.
That's true. So, who knows? You're right. It's probably... You're right. I think it's more the South Side Seaport as well.
South Street Seaport.
South Street Seaport, I'm sorry. So, yeah. Because right now, if you go to the Brooklyn Bridge, on the Brooklyn side, they've built this, like, beautiful, elaborate park called Brooklyn Bridge Park. And there's... like some restaurants there, like dotting the ends of it.
But it's not a mall.
It's not a mall. So.
And also, that's way after this.
That's way after this, is right, yeah. So, unless
anyway,
the Brooklyn Bridge Mall is a thing, we don't think so. A fake location, but the Brooklyn Bridge prominent in this episode, which is cool. Anyway, Peter shows up to this mall. He fights the fake Spider-Man. Again, there's more tricks with like walls collapsing and closing. Like, at one point, Mysterio creates like a hole in the wall of this place and builds a golden bridge for Peter to follow him.
Mm-hmm.
Like, but Peter of course like runs into the wall. It was all fake. Like, I don't know, like Mysterio's powers are explained later. They're just hologram cubes mm-hmm. that like display projections of what's going on. But at the same time, Mysterio must be doing a lot of like distract magic, where he's just going at the regular exit.
Yeah.
Well, it seems like he's going, like, through an impassable object.
Right.
So that's always like that's the fun magic of Mysterio in a sense that it's like his power is totally bullshit.
But at least in a cartoon, like a sleight of hand old magician sort of thing.
You presume it to be, but like it's not. That's not like explained ever or shown. Uh-huh. It's just kind of magical how he does escape.
Yeah,
it's going to be interesting how they do the movie version of Mysterio, because they're going to have to make it more real to life. They can't make it so fantastical and fake.
Yeah.
You know, in the comics and a cartoon, you could just make Mysterio as like completely magical as he needs to be until the last panel when he's caught. And it's like he just says it was all a trick.
Right.
And you're like, OK, like, you know, you're not to believe your own eyes as the viewer of the comic or the cartoon.
Mm-hmm.
But in a movie, it's going to be a little different. I think they can't just do that.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Anyway, what happens next? So Peter, you know, after this, like, he goes out to the Brooklyn Bridge. That's where Mysterio is waiting for him. They have a showdown. It's a nice little scene that shows more mise-en-scene of New York City in the sense that Spider-Man's climbing up the Brooklyn Bridge. There's actually an active crowd out there, like, watching and filming this. A lot of people are cheering Mysterio when they see him, and they're jeering Spider-Man. And then Mysterio, like, blast some rocks off the top of the Brooklyn Bridge, and Spider-Man thinks they're fake at first, but turns out they're real. Spider-Sense goes off. He doesn't trust his Spider-Sense.
Mm.
He falls into the Hudson River, presumably drowned.
East River, sorry.
But
sorry.
No, it's good for you to correct all my geographical errors here. We want to be as New York accurate as we can in this podcast. it's presumed that he drowns, but lo and behold, he's created a spider air sac that he's been breathing underwater. So there's no, like, magical item that Peter, too, can't create with his webs as well, whenever it's convenient. Like, he can make shields and parachutes and breathing things.
Yeah, but that's one of the coolest things about, like, comics and superheroes in general is, like, you see what their parameters are, right?
Yeah.
You're like, okay, he's Spider-Man. I know what his powers are. He makes webs. He walks up walls. He's got spider sense. But part of the fun of watching it is as the stories unfold, like seeing the ingenious ways that he uses those powers. Like, he's so creative within the parameters given.
I mean,
and it's the same thing with the X-Men, you know?
That's true. But I think with Spider-Man, in the case of his various web powers, like in this case, it's like, I didn't know he could make an air sac out of his, like,
yeah,
how does that even work, though? You know, like, because it just looks like a paper bag that he's just breathing underwater. I don't know how that's supposed to work.
It's like a couple extra lungfuls of air, right?
All
right,
maybe. But my point about that, it reminds me a bit of the 60s Batman TV show.
Mm.
In that, like, right before they're about to be killed, Batman's like, luckily I had my
shark repellent.
Yeah.
My bat shark repellent.
That's the most famous one.
Right.
Yeah, I had that on me. Like,
yeah.
Like we were watching we've been watching a lot of classic 60s Batman. We have all the Blu-rays. They're so much fun. I have a lot to say about that show, but just in general though, every episode's a two-parter, and the first episode always ends with Batman and Robin about to die.
Yeah.
And the explanations in the second episode about how they got out of it are so hilarious and worth it.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, luckily Alfred demagnetized my bat suit this morning so that Mr. Freeze's magnet ray, you know, had no effect on me, and I was able to escape. I just want to say one thing about the Batman TV show. You know, you can mock that show all you want as being a complete cartoon version of Batman that's, like, bullshit and not related to the cool, like, serious Batman and all different types of mediums.
Right.
The one thing I will say about the Batman TV show is Burt Ward's... Not, is that his name? Yeah, Burt Ward's performance as Robin is to this date still the greatest on-screen performance of the character of Robin in the history of cinema.
He really does commit like no other.
He is, like, so ridiculously tuned into that role. And, like, he's, like, violently angry in most episodes, too.
Yeah.
Every time he talks about a villain, he's clenching his fists in, like, the most serious, like, disturbing way and pounding his hands together. He's just angry and filled with rage and, like, do-gooderism, too.
Yeah.
But, like, really, he's, like, an intense character. He has way more intensity than Adam West as Batman.
Yeah, well, he's channeling his, like, adolescent energies, right? Like...
Right, yeah. I mean, I haven't seen the new Teen Titan live-action show that features Robin that supposedly says, fuck Batman and that.
Hmm.
But outside of him, I haven't given that a shot yet. Still, Burt Ward was the best Robin ever. And I think that's just funny to, like, compare, like, cross-compare across all media.
Hmm.
And think, like, Robin really has not been, like, outdone. Like, because think about it, like, that performance could ruin the show based on the costume alone.
Mm-hmm.
He's wearing green, like, men's panties. mm-hmm. you know, and like little
and pantyhose,
right? White pantyhose. And those shoes are ridiculous.
The elf shoes.
Yeah, the elf shoes. Like everything about that character could be such a joke, but Burt Ward sells it so convincingly that he really is pulled off the comic book page. You know, like you buy him as much as you'd buy reading Robin in the Batman comic. Mm. All right, so that's an aside. I had to get that out somewhere. I was thinking about just posting about it on Facebook, but nobody would care. I'm sure less people care here, but whatever. All right, so where were we? So, you know, Spider-Man, Mysterio gets away. He's annoyed, but he's been so caught up in chasing Mysterio, he forgot about his date with Mary Jane, which is a recurring theme in the show.
I know.
He forgets about so many dates that he's so excited for. A lot of times he doesn't forget, too. He knows he has a date, and he's so pissed he can't get out of, like, saving the world. Mm. But in this case, he forgot about it, and he's so angry at himself. Mary Jane calls him. She, like, says that, with me, it's one strike and you're out. And, you know, it's, like, such a bummer for Peter that he quits being Spider-Man. That's how upset he is. He throws his costume. Like, everyone thinks he's dead anyway. Mm-hmm. He's like, all right, I'm dead. Spider-Man's over. What a stupid, like, idea this was. I don't think this is going to be the first time we're going to see Peter quit as being Spider-Man.
That's, nope, definitely not.
It's also going to be a recurring theme to a certain extent. But this leads in... But then Lieutenant Lee, who says she's been trying to figure out who Spider-Man is for years, she tracks down Peter and she says, you know, you're the closest person I know to Spider-Man. You know, you've got to get Spider-Man to help me get this guy Mysterio. I just know in my heart that Spider-Man's a good guy. And he says, well, you know, like, maybe Spider-Man's dead or doesn't want to help anymore. And she says something like, Spider-Man's the kind of guy who's never turned his back on the city when it's been in need. And that, in a sense, makes Peter feel real guilty. And then he remembers why he became Spider-Man in the
right.
first place.
She's like, too bad spending all that time with him didn't rub off on
you.
Oh,
yeah.
Like, his good quality yeah. didn't rub off on you. And then he feels, like, super guilt-tripped.
Yeah.
He goes inside and he, like, is reminiscing about Uncle Ben and...
his whole origin as a wrestler.
Right.
Peter Parker being guilted out is just one of the greatest tropes in comic books. The guilt he feels is so great and so... it's like it's constantly tested too, because his life would be a lot easier if he quits mm-hmm. being Spider-Man. I mean, stuff they've explored in the movies too, in Spider-Man 3, you know.
Yeah.
He quits in various movies. But here it's really great. And so then we get to see his origin. He says, you know, when he got his powers, he became a wrestler to earn money and fame. In this version, his first Spider-Man costume is his final Spider-Man costume. Mm-hmm. It's not like he had a crappier one before. That's like one small touch didn't really like that would have been helpful here, but they don't go into. But anyway, then we see that he lets the guy who robs the wrestling rink run away, and then it turns out that guy killed Uncle Ben, like, you know, coincidentally. When Spider-Man finds out, he's so shocked. You see Spider-Man's eyes like completely like open up wide when he pulls the robber's mask off, mm. and that's why he had to be Spider-Man. So, you know, he's kind of cursed to do this because, and he finally lets loose the signature quote. With great power comes great responsibility.
Yeah.
Which I think if you read the original first Spider-Man issue ever, that's not the exact quote. It's something like Stan Lee added more flourish to it. I forget what it is exactly, but it's like, with ever great power comes ever, you know, fantastic responsibility. It's like a little more, it got pared down over the years.
Okay.
But anyway, that's the classic line, with great power comes great responsibility. A truly, like, wonderful message to put out there to people, mm-hmm. you know, that, like, should you, like, come upon great fortune of some kind, it's incumbent upon you to not just, like, use it all for yourself for matters of greed. You've got to, like, you know, spread the wealth to a certain extent. Mm-hmm. I mean, at least that's my reading of it. I guess other people can read into it what they will. But, I mean, and you don't even have to be a superhero or be rich or anything. It's just, like, in general, like, the more capable you are, the more you learn, the less ignorant you are, the more it's your responsibility to be a force of good in your life to, you know, extend those positive ripples, right? Okay.
Right.
All right. So where were we? We also get our first – I don't know if it's our first glimpse of Uncle Ben in the show, but we see him in a photograph. Mm-hmm. Anyway, so it's at this point that Spider-Man and Lieutenant Lee figure out that Mysterio is Quentin Beck, who was a special effects man that they were filming a movie on the Brooklyn Bridge, and Beck wanted a bigger explosion, so he had some unsafe mortars placed, and that caused a helicopter to crash. which Spider-Man had to rescue the pilot. Spider-Man figured out what went wrong, and he, you know, captured Beck on the scene to hold him accountable, saying, like, you were negligently dangerous. Mm-hmm. Beck was sentenced to a year in prison. We see his criminal file, which is insanely misspelled in two places.
Yeah.
It says New York, spelled, you know, N-E-W-Y-O-C-K. And then I guess it's supposed to spell, like, felony endangerment.
Uh-huh.
But it's something like Fauvany Engraman or something. And we posted... Yeah, we posted on the X-Men Task Podcast Facebook group. Go check it out there to see.
It's funny.
One of our other podcast posters, was it Tom?
Tom, I think, yeah.
Yeah, he posted another image from this episode earlier in the week. You know, I thought it was actually from the previous episode, but it turns out it's from this one.
Right.
So I got a bit confused there, but later Spider-Man, when he's going to Mysterio's Wonder Studios base, he gets all these blueprints of different areas, and he finds the museum blueprint, and it's spelled like Muscom.
Right, yeah. Yeah.
So whoever the artist was, like, writing these forms, either English was not the first language, or they're just so lazy, they, you know...
Or confused.
Right, or they're rushed or something. Anyway, yeah.
Yeah, thanks for that gem, Tom.
Yeah. What else? So Spider-Man finds Mysterio's base. He sends a message to JJ saying, if you want to know the real story of Mysterio, come to this location, which he does. Spider-Man sees the fake Spider-Man suit there with suction cups, which at first he thinks is real chintzy, but then sees that they work really well.
Well, yeah, right, exactly. He's like, well, whatever works, I guess. Yeah. You know? It's funny.
And then he discovers the hologram cubes, too, which, while I like the hologram cubes, I find them... Like, it's really hard to imagine...
Yeah, it's thin.
It's thin, because it's like... the way Mysterio uses them, they seem to be way more advanced than how they actually are when Spider-Man discovers them. I mean, when he discovers them, they just seem like projectors.
Right.
Like mini projectors in a small cube.
Right.
That play a movie over a 2D space.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess that they somehow project in three dimensions, which is...
It's like Gem and the Holograms.
Right.
You know, it's like really too believable.
Mysterio pulled from the Gem and the Hologram animated universe somehow. He would have been the ultimate villain there. You know, another show animated by Marvel Studios.
Right.
Not a Marvel character, but still some ties there. But you're right. Yeah, so he has the magical power of holograms for the most part. Also, he has the power of, like, robotics engineering. Because he has some robotic monsters, too, that he lets loose on Spider-Man.
Right. Well, he was, like, a special effects guy, so I guess maybe that's where those skills came from.
Right. I mean, it's hard to say where this guy got all his money to run the studio with all these incredibly advanced technologies and things. Like, how, I guess maybe from the robberies.
Mm.
But still, like, he must have been... He's, like, one of these magical scientists that is so good at being a scientist that he can overcome the presumably... millions to billions of dollars you would need to develop this kind of technology.
Right.
Like, he can just make it in his basement, you know, somehow. But that's, like, the charm of a lot of the Marvel Universe, that there's these mad scientists out there that are just so good at science that they can overcome, you know.
Pretty cool.
Right. I mean, you would think that, like, to make a hologram cube, you would need a lot of, like, rare earth minerals that are hard to get by.
Right.
You know, which we saw this, like, crazy Google News alert in our phones that said that they discovered this score of rare earth minerals off the coast of, like, a Japanese island that they say will keep the world's consumer market knee-deep in rare earth minerals for centuries. They say, like, oh, boy, we're going to run out of, like, niblonium or, like, some, you know, I don't know, like, all these rare materials. But, like, thank God they found, like, a whole stash of them, like, off the coast of Japan. Now we can keep building our fancy electronics without fear of running out of them.
And we'll never have to recycle.
Right. Well, that's why I feel bad. Like, in my drawer, I have all these old cell phones and, like, iPods and things. And, obviously, I know you're supposed to recycle them somehow, but I'm afraid of throwing them out, too.
Uh-huh.
And it's just, like, I know that, like, they're filled with valuable rare earth minerals. Like, not saying that I would cash in on them personally, but, like, and also unrecyclable parts.
Uh-huh.
So I just, like, I never know what to do with them. I know you have to take them to some, like, computer recycling center.
Yeah.
Is that basically... Yeah, but then I'm also afraid of, like, the data on them, and they haven't been charged up in years, and there's just, like, a bunch of, like, weird reasons as to why they stay in my drawer instead of why, like, take the 5 minutes to Google what you do with them.
Well, you're in luck, because I've taken the 5 minutes to Google it.
You've done it.
I've brought my devices, and now I know a guy.
All right, you'll have to show me later. Okay. All right, anyway... So Spider-Man's tangling Mysterio. He's dealing with the combination of holograms and robot monsters and multiple Mysterios. I like that Spider-Man references Roger Corman at some point when he's fighting these monsters because they're kind of cheesy looking. And Roger Corman, of course, is the world-famous B-movie director who's made a lot of, like, low-budget films. And most famously, well, maybe not most famously, but most infamously the Fantastic Four movie that was never released, that some film studio had him produce for $1 million just so they could hold on to the rights. Constantine Films, I believe they're called. And they've held on to them to this day. They've had a licensing agreement with Fox. Now, presumably, that's all going to be scooped up by Disney. All right, anyway, but check out, I think you can download it on the website, the Fantastic Four Roger Corman movie. It's quite a ridiculous spectacle of low-budget Marvel action. Anyway, Mysterio almost has Spider-Man captured. He falls into a spider web. Spider-Man actually pretty easily gets out of this death-defying thing. Also, JJ and Lieutenant Lee are in a web. They're about to be lowered onto some, like, jagged stalagmites or something. Stalagmites. Anyway, jagged rocks. they're about to fall into and die. Spider-Man saves them rather easily. There's a bunch of Mysterios. Spider-Man uses his spider sense to catch the real one. And that's pretty much it with Mysterio. He's arrested.
Yep.
Meanwhile, Peter runs into MJ on the campus of the university. She forgives him.
I'm surprised she forgives him.
Yeah.
Yeah. She's like, we both weren't acting ourselves yesterday. How about you walk me to class? And he's like, all right.
I think there's... Now that I think about it in the moment, I think there's some realism as to why she would forgive him.
Yeah.
Because he blew her off. He was the cool one. You know, she's, like, incredibly, like, beautiful, like, popular, hot-to-trot woman on campus. They make a date. Like, most guys would, like, be ahead of that date 2 hours early, you know? Like, completely, like, nervous and sweaty, waiting to impress her. And he just forgets about her. And in a way, that's cool. I mean, I'm not, like, encouraging that kind of behavior, but I'm just saying naturally, though. Like, I think... I could
feel like it's like he's playing it cool even though he's not playing it.
Right, yeah. It's not intentionally... Right, so it makes Peter more desirable because, you know, he's hard to get in his own sense as well.
Right, okay.
But anyway, she forgives Peter. There's a funny dialogue in there where she said something like, do you know what I have in common with Spider-Man? And he's like, oh, you both look good in skin-tight outfits?
Right.
I thought that was, like, a really, like, super, like, flirtatious...
Yeah, he likes her.
Yeah, I know, but I'm just saying that's, like an overly confident line, though, in a way, too. That way he's able to just spin that out real fast. I was impressed by Peter's... He's got a lot of game, is what I'm saying. You know, like, with these... Like, he's smart and witty enough to, like, to really, to, you know, make his potential lovers laugh. So that's the funny line. But then he says, well, do you still need help with your physics homework? And she says, no, like, much like theater, I've discovered that physics is all about, like, trying to understand how the real world works. And once I figured that out, I was able to study on my own, and I figured it all out. And
how abstract.
Right, how abstract of her. And she's pretty charming, though. Like, yeah. I actually... Like, I don't remember much of the Mary Jane character. I'm excited to see how she evolves in this show. So, so far, she's been really charming, and, like, I can see why Peter likes her.
Yeah.
I thought she'd just be kind of, like, ditzy and stupid, but
no,
she's
not. No, they actually show her as really smart and capable.
Right, yeah. She's got her own agency and stuff. So, and then the episode ends. So, like we said, a very good one-off episode. A lot of good elements. Mary Jane, Aunt May not liking Peter, Spider-Man.
Mysterio's
introduction's really good. Spider-Man's origin. Some information on JJ and why he doesn't like Peter Parker. The introduction of Lieutenant Lee. A lot going on. A really highly recommended episode.
Yeah, really cool.
Yeah. So, that's all I have for this episode. I'm trying to think if there's anything else in the wider world of Spider-Man or comic books we should address. I can't really... Nothing comes to mind. So with that, I'll say please, like I mentioned before, join the X-Men Task Podcast Facebook group. Just seek us out there. You can speak to us. Let us know you know, what we're doing right, what we're doing wrong. Interact with all the other fans of the show. It's always fun to hear from you all. Also, rate and review the podcast 5 stars on iTunes, wherever you rate and review podcasts. And follow me on Twitter at Willie Simpson. Sonia, do you have any final words before we barrel into the continuing depressing winter of 2019?
No, I don't think so. How about you? You got everything about Burt Ward off your chest?
I got everything about Burt Ward off my chest. I'm looking forward to seeing Aquaman at some point.
Oh, yeah.
You know, enough people have said it's good that it makes me want to check it out. I don't know. I trust them.
Okay.
We'll see. Right. I have a, for me, it's a low bar to impress, in the sense that, like, the movie, if the movie's good, I'll like it. It doesn't have to be great, but it doesn't mean that I'm going to think it's like me thinking it's like genius or something's another story. But, like, it's all about me getting my money's worth.
Okay.
So if I get my money's worth, I'm satisfied enough. So, but I've, the DC movies are mostly crappy, so yeah. I don't know. We'll
remains
see.
Remains to be seen.
Remains to be seen. So maybe we'll talk about Aquaman in the future once we see it. And that's all I have to say. Good night, everybody.
Good night.